Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now I'm about to introduce you to our esteemed business panel who are going to be looking at the stories of the week and indeed the weekend. I'm delighted to welcome Doug Keating. He's a former journalist turned communications consultant. And Linda Daly also joins us, a business reporter with the Sunday Times. Good morning to you both. How are you? Good
morning, Bobby.
Now, Doug, I know you've been dying all morning to talk about this next story. Elon, the man, has lost his mind. So says the Irish Daily Mail. The mega, MAGA meltdown.
Yeah, the last 48 hours have been, to get out the popcorn and watch as these two alpha male gorillas, as Elon Musk's father even describes them, both in this paper. And it's not the Daily Mail that's describing Elon as the man who has lost his mind. That's a quote that an ABC News journalist got from President Trump. Very fruity language from both of these men. Trump saying he's the man who's lost his mind. Musk in the last 48 hours criticizing Trump's big, beautiful tax bill, which Elon Musk doesn't think do enough to cut the deficit. Musk calling on Trump to be impeached. And I guess it is pretty remarkable how this bromance has fallen to pieces. And I was sort of wondering whether, if you were one of those Tesla owners who was feeling a bit sheepish that Musk was in bed with Trump, do you now feel that, less embarrassed now that Musk has gone totally postal outside the White House? I would, suggest that I'd still feel pretty sheepish because I think both of them look pretty awful.
Yeah, and both of them, Linda Daly, have a lot to lose.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the Washington Post that did a real-time analysis of Musk's tweets. So as he tweeted how much money was lost off the share price of Tesla. So on Thursday, he lost $34 billion from Tesla, 14% of the share price.
Unbelievable. And yeah, the numbers are absolutely staggering.
Yeah. It rallied by 4% on Friday, but still, just highlighted how this spat has affected the bottom line of his companies.
Yeah, and it's interesting as well, they both get down and dirty. Trump saying you're going to lose these government contracts, this Jeffrey Epstein thing,
this could all turn on a dime, over the weekend. I mean, the talk now is around de-escalation. Musk in the last, while I was sleeping, agreeing with tweets saying that he should cool off and step back for a couple of days. Bill Ackman, well-known hedge fund manager, who said he should make peace for the benefit of our great country. Musk seeming to agree. So they both, I do think have a vested interest in cooling this down.
It's interesting as well, is it not? And if we look at the piece in the Irish Times, once it starts costing them both financially, or for Musk, it's personal. For Trump, it's the US.
Yeah.
But if the pressure comes from external pressure to say, lads, you've got to stop doing this.
Well, that's it.
Because you're going to destroy everything that you've built up here.
Yeah, I mean, so Trump threatened to cancel all the US contracts that Elon's involved in. So that's SpaceX. Even Tesla, considering a few months ago he was, showing off the Tesla cars in Washington.
I believe it's still there. It hasn't been sold yet.
Yeah, he's threatened to sell it.
Give him a fiver for it.
Musk threatened to turn off his SpaceX satellites. So, I mean, there's a lot at stake here. A lot of the commentators are saying that they will kind of step back from it. They will calm things down. And I did think it was kind of interesting how Trump reacted. I mean, he didn't lash out where he usually would lash out.
Yeah. Doug, finally on this, the letters page, the Irish Times always gives a few gems. There's one there from Breed Miller at Lone Road Roscommon, which I thought you might like.
Yeah, I guess, the Irish Times letters page often gives you the last word on many issues in the media. And Breed Miller has this rather nice and very pithy letter. Sir, in the very public, very dirty divorce between Trump and Musk, who will get custody of J.D. Vance?
God love us. Linda, Irish shares following the global trend, hitting all-time high price despite the uncertainty around the tariffs against the lead in the business section of the Irish Independent. But there are some major risks here. We're back to 2006, 2007 territory in terms of valuations.
This is one story by Donal O'Donovan where you kind of have to read beyond the headline. Everything is great and followed global trends. The stock exchange reached a record high. But behind all that, you have the idea that maybe things are overheating. I suppose as well, the ECB cut rates were helpful. But yeah, I mean, the Euronext has been hemorrhaging big players and it all could collapse by July when the tariffs start coming in.
This Bank of America's influential strategist, Michael Hartnett, Doug, warning yesterday that global stocks are getting close to triggering a technical sell signal, saying the market is running too hot after surging 20% in 2 months.
Yeah, so we had the tariffs announcement, which, you know, stock markets tanked. They then, you know, came back very sharply, partly as, you know, the tariff strategy seemed to unravel a bit. And markets seem to have been able to look through the uncertainty that tariffs have caused. And as you say, Michael Hartnett from Bank of America saying, you know, you've gone up 20% in 2 months. Valuations are pretty punchy. And, you know, there are triggers that could be the moment when the market goes, you know what, actually, we've got ahead of ourselves here. So July the 9th is an interesting one. That's, I think, the deadline on the EU-US, the sort of 50%. And, you know, I was on the show back in, you know, March, April, around when the whole tariff thing was happening. And, you know, my personal view is markets are, you know, quite aggressively priced and they've raced ahead. So I've been spectacularly wrong. The MSCI, it's not just the ISEC, the MSCI Global Index, which is benchmark for global stock markets, hit an all-time high on Tuesday. The stock markets are, you know, the S&P is nearly back at its all-time high. It's unbelievable.
Which brings me to Cliff Taylor's piece, which I have to say I read twice this morning because I really thought it was absolutely a game changer. The Irish economy grew by 22% over the past year. Yes, you read that right. The figures are mind-bending. Here's how to understand what's really going on. Linda Daly.
Yeah, I mean, he warns that the bonkers data is not real in the sense that it doesn't reflect what is happening in the economy that we all live. So a lot of the pharma companies have been kind of just flooding America with their stock, trying to rush it over before the tariffs come in. Ireland is so reliant on the likes of Pfizer and Microsoft that you kind of have to look beyond those figures and extrapolate those figures out to really see how the market is
performing. Well, you would have thought that if there, you know, if stock has been landed into America to have excess stock, let's call it, and I think he refers to, you know, warehouses full of drugs and stuff over there, there's going to be a downside to that later this year.
Yeah, if it falls
off. You would have
off,
thought so.
Definitely. I thought what was interesting was Daniel Krall, a chief economist at Oxford Economics, he calculates that Ireland, we account for 4% of the Eurozone economy, but it counted for half of its total growth.
Which is a really scary stat.
Yeah, so now people are now looking at the EU growth data, excluding Ireland, because we've made it totally meaningless. Because the underlying, when you strip out the sort of pharma exports, etc., modified domestic demand, which is sort of measuring our real growth, was up 1%.
Yeah, so, I mean, 0.8%.
But I think actually, Bobby, it does also make us think there's going to be, you know, we could be on here in a year's time and be going, GDP has dropped 15%, the world is ending. But it might be that modified domestic demand has just continued growing.
But
so,
you know, the other thing, Doug, is that, you know, this puts us right in the crosshairs of America. You know, this is a tension that we do not need.
No.
People in America saying the Irish, who account for 4% of the Eurozone economy, accounted for half its total growth. I'm saying it again because it jumps off the page as you.
Well, I mean, it was the kind of distortions from the big tech taxes that started Paul Krugman with this, calling us the, you know, leprechaun economics, and I guess he would call this leprechaun economics again. And it's this huge reliance, as Cliff notes, on multinationals whose doings and exports and how they account for taxes is hugely opaque. And he asked two sort of big ticket questions at the end that, you know, rather than just this front loading of exports to the US, you know, could big pharma come ultimately under pressure to move production out of Ireland? Bad, obviously, for our economy. But also, could they come under pressure to radically review? And this is big pharma, big tech, their corporate structures that allow them to benefit from these tax optimization. And that, again, could cause a massive swing in our public finances.
Another nugget in this piece is the piece of data that seemed a bit out of line. 30% fall in corporation tax in May.
Yeah. So, but they're saying that's because last year was distorted upwards by a couple of companies, and actually the Department of Finance is hoping and praying, and I hope they're right, that June, you know, should be okay. But it
really makes these figures hard to kind of comprehend, let's call it. Okay, let's move to something that we can understand, the acquisition of one business, buying out its partner. We see AIB buying out Fiserv and on the merchant services side of the business, Linda. What's happening here?
Other way around, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, AIB has sold 49.8% share or something like that to Fiserv. So I do have this vague recollection of back in during the recession, writing for the website of AIB Merchant Services, so just after it was launched in 2007. But it's a long time ago.
You're part of the embedded value of that business, Linda.
Yeah, I made it what it was today.
Well done, Linda.
They're a bit uncertain about, or they're not clear about how much it's made from this sale, though it does say that it equates to about 215 million.
Yeah, they're working that out on the basis of the income that in the minority stake in 2000, and I suppose they're grossing that up to get a value of somewhere around 215 million.
Yeah, I think kind of how you'd see it probably is AIB is disposing of something that's a sort of non-core business, hopefully at a decent price. And that, you know, freeing up tier one capital, I mean, we all go eyes glaze over. What on earth does that mean? Basically, what I think that means is it gives it a balance sheet that it can enable it to do more of its core business, which is lending to consumers, lending to companies, you know, get a decent price, move on.
Moving swiftly on, because there's a nice piece in the Irish Examiner, and McDonald's don't tell you an awful lot about what's going on in their business. But Gordon Deegan has done a bit of a chat with Jim Ronayne, who's the operator in Cork and Tipperary. I think he runs 6 McDonald's, and he's some interesting things to say, Linda.
Yeah, somebody who's tried to interview a couple of Cork McDonald's franchisees. It's quite difficult to get past head office.
Yeah.
It's a good piece by Gordon Deegan. What's really interesting is that in one McDonald's on Commons Road in Blackpool, which I'm not too familiar with.
I know, it was the first McDonald's, I think, that this franchisee took on.
Yeah, 64% of its revenues annually are by drive-through. 10% of the old revenues are online. So it just goes to show maybe we are becoming a bit of a
So that's two out of three people
go through
are consuming it either online or in their car.
Yeah.
Only one third of them are going into the shop.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, that is amazing. I thought as well that another stat, Mr. Ronayne revealed that McDonald's franchise in Ireland are self-insured and they operate their own common fund for insurance, which they set up in 2018 as the costs had gone out of hand. That's an interesting development.
It is. So there are 95 McDonald's across, I think that's the Republic of Ireland figure, and there are 19 franchisees, of which Mr. Ronayne is one. And I guess it's interesting that what they've done is insurance costs were obviously going up and up and up. They said, you know, we actually, between us, a sort of cooperative approach, really, saying we'll pool money and we'll look after each other and that'll bring our costs down.
Yeah, yeah. No, really interesting. And again, I was in the McDonald's up in Carrick and Shannon recently. The owner there owns about 6. So they encourage, one of the things they encourage is for people to work from McDonald's and work their way up to being a multiple franchisee, which is, I think, is a great model.
Yeah, and the 6 franchises talked about in this article made 30 million in revenue last year, and he's forecasting 32 million this year. So
yeah, what's not to like?
Yeah.
From Derry to DR, a nice, interesting read, 2 pages in the Irish Mail today, Linda. Really, really about Jonathan Anderson. He's a 40-year-old designer from Maher and Felt. But he's doing serious stuff, and he's become a massive player in this world of high-end fashion.
Yeah, I mean, he's possibly become one of the most famous designers in the last year. Anyway, there was a lot of speculation. It was kind of the industry's worst kept secret that he was going to change from the Spanish retailer Loewe, as
well,
it's pronounced.
I got it.
Well done, Linda.
And to go to defect to Dior, which he has done. But not only has he gone to look after the men's clothing, he's doing the two things, women and men, I should say. But his story is really fascinating. Peter O'Reilly in the Sunday Times a few months ago interviewed his father before it was announced that he was...
Former Irish rugby player, yeah, Willie.
Willie Anderson. Yeah. And it was an amazing piece. It was I was crying at the end of it because he spoke about how Jonathan had come out when he was gay and how he always accepted him. He's dyslexic. Willie himself had a hard time. He ended up spending a few months in jail in Argentina.
That's right. It was an incident with a flag.
Flag, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and how his parents remortgaged their house to help him get a start. So, and he's really loved by the celebrities. He, for Loewe, he designed Rihanna's outfit for the Super Bowl a couple of years ago when she revealed she was pregnant. It was a huge moment.
And now that you mention Loewe, he took sales there from 230 million to between 1.5 and 2 billion. Now there's a fellow who's doing his job.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be very adept at this sort of celebrity, working with celebrities. The Rihanna story, I was looking at the article, Cate Blanchett, Beyonce, Daniel Craig, just some of the people he's worked with. But it's a big responsibility. Dior's revenues, it's part of the big LVMH empire, last year, 8.75 billion. So
amazing.
As a 40-year-old, there's a lot resting on this man from Derry's shoulders.
So absolutely.
We wish him very well.
Good luck to him. Linda, there's a lot of talk about AI. Even we'll be doing a piece on it later on in the programme. Will AI kill entry-level jobs? Just watch the recruitment ads. So says Adrian Weckler.
Yeah, look, it's been, I suppose it's a warning that's been kind of echoed by a number of entrepreneurs in the area. I interviewed Sean Blanchfield from Gentic, a new company. He's well known within that industry, and he's convinced that it will get rid of a lot of white collar jobs. And I suppose that's different to what recent or in the past, what industrial revolutions have done, because they got rid of the blue collar jobs. But he made an interesting point, which isn't in this article by Adrian, but I thought it was good. He said governments have to rethink the value that we put on different jobs, so carers could get paid more now and more people could become carers rather than these lawyers, which is worrying because...
Well, another example cited in the article was about, you know, Microsoft Excel.
Yeah, so this is the counterpoint. So this is people who are flogging AI, telling us it's going to change the world and there's going to be 20% unemployment, which is all a bit dystopian and worrying. But there is a good quote from Benedict Evans. He says, "The idea that AI will wipe out large categories of white-collar work seems to overlap quite a lot with the idea that much of professional services, lawyers, bankers, analysts, consultants, consists of idiots doing something really easily, mostly by people with no experience of this field. First," he says, "a lot of this is harder to automate than it looks. And second, why did Excel produce more employment in finance, not less?" And I do think that's an interesting point, that in every technological progression that we think will change the world and mean we do less, somehow it explodes. And I wouldn't be surprised if AI was the same.
I think you might be right. And finally, Linda, this portfolio is a pain in the arts, we're told. The department to be renamed, as the Minister O'Donovan did not want to be labelled as SMACC, i.e. SMAC.
Yeah, so it's a good article by Brian Mahan in the Daily Mail here. So the department that O'Donovan is supposed to be taking care of was due to be called Sports. Let me get this right. Sorry, Sports, Media, Culture, ACC, right? SMAC, okay? He's changed it to Culture, Communications and Sport. And that's because I can't see with my glasses and the writing's too small. But Marie Sherlock is not happy. I mean, like, I think she's taken it a bit, you know, too seriously. They had a discussion at a board meeting. Yeah, they wanted to know.
Get over it, Marie.
He didn't want it to be called SMAC all the time.
All right, Doug Keating and Linda Daly, thanks for a great review of the papers.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.